Hey everyone, this is Mike. Last week we began our discussion of the Dick Tracy Show, the classic 1961 or two experiment into racism. And we talked so much that we divided into two episodes. So join us this week for the conclusion of the Dick Tracy Show.
Some of your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
decision. I wish I was a man with a mechanical heart. I'd cut the rub my enemies alone. I'd tear the guys apart. Then scatter the pieces.
Yeah, I feel like it's like, well, that's these aren't really crimes they're committing so much as just like, you know, day outings. You know, they're like, oh, yeah. They're like an old married couple and they just don't know what to do. So they're like, well, why don't we go, why don't we go oyster poaching today? You know, like that'd be a lark, which is another crime that's committed. That is by Pruneface and his life partner, Itchy, I think.
Yeah. Pruneface and Itchy are just, yeah, they're just, they have a submarine and they're scooping up oysters and I'm like, is that really stealing? Isn't that just kind of harvesting?
Yeah. It's like, you know, it is the commons. So
yeah. You're under arrest for farming.
I guess maybe they don't have a license, but it's kind of maybe, like at that point, it's like, it's funny that it's so simple. Why wouldn't you just get a license? It's like, maybe because actually Pruneface and Itchy, their real crime is that they're libertarians and they're just like, we don't need no license. We take oysters by right, not by privilege. So, but yeah, they're just oyster farmers basically. And then I think, well, let's see, what other crimes do we have? The Mole and Sketch Paree have a great plan to get a Dick Tracy mask and rob a bank.
Yeah, so, and it works.
It works. They're like, oh no, a lifelike mask. It's like, that is clearly just a Halloween mask. The mouth doesn't even move. And then let's see. Then we have, Stooge Viller.
And yeah, Stooge Viller and Mumbles. They're the ones who stole the pizza pasta or whatever.
Right. And then, Cheater Gunsmoke works alone.
Yeah, Cheater Gunsmoke does not have a partner. I guess he thought that, you know, but he's the one that gets arrested by Hippo Calorie. And he thought, yeah, I can take this guy.
Yeah. What was his crime? I can't remember what he was actually doing that got him arrested.
He was robbing a department store. He was trying to get entry into the office that was in the toy department.
Again, like we said, very, very penny ante crimes going on here. A big departure from the comic strip where people are getting murdered left and right. Apparently, according to Wikipedia, some of the villains had voices patterned after famous actors. I vaguely recognized Flat Top as Peter Lorre, but apparently BB Eyes, who we forgot to mention. There's BB Eyes. Yes. Who is he paired up with? He's paired up with
Flat Top. Yeah.
Oh, Flat Top. He's supposed to sound like Edward G. Robinson. Which I guess he's got the gangster voice, you know, the meow, meow, you know that voice.
Yeah.
And
Pruneface has a Boris Karloff voice? I didn't really hear that.
I did not hear that either. Because a Boris Karloff voice should be much more wavery like this, I feel like.
Yeah, Boris Karloff is the inventor of Halloween radio voice.
Yes, exactly. And then there's the brow, apparently, is to sound like James Cagney, but we did not watch an episode with him.
We didn't watch an episode with the brow. The brow is just a guy with a big head, and then he has Oodles, who I guess Oodles is kind of fat, really. And
oh, is that his thing? Oodles is fat?
Yeah, he's your big dumb guy voice. Like, good idea, boss.
And okay, but isn't he also a they kind of relegate him to sidekick, it sounds like, even though he's a criminal mastermind in his own right.
You know, he is an actual official character, but he just didn't have a lot to do with it. Okay, Wikipedia describes Oodles as a 469-pound hitman who was obsessed with his weight, and his calorie counting was his undoing as he left his calorie counter at the scene of a crime. While on the lam, he got a haircut and tried losing weight, but he couldn't lose Dick Tracy. Tracy shot him dead on December 21st, 1955.
Damn. So first of all, I want to say about Oodles. what is a calorie counter?
I guess it's like a book where you write down what you've eaten for the day.
Oh, like one of those. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like one of those weird Weight Watcher things where you have to have a little notebook. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, also, apparently, for whatever reason, in the cartoon, he's blue.
Yeah, he's blue. You know, what is it with fat people in Saturday morning cartoons where you turn them blue? First this and next King Hippo.
Yeah, that's a little odd, but okay.
Yeah.
This haircut that he got is, I don't know what's going on there. I'm just gonna leave it. I'm not gonna talk about this bizarre kind of flat top he's got.
Yeah, he's got this haircut that makes him look like he's wearing a Rembrandt hat.
Yeah, and I'm just confused because looking at this thing, there's a comic panel, I guess, where he's like saying, "How do I look, boys?" And everyone's like, "You look 20 years younger, Oodles." And it's just like, okay, why? I don't know how to say this, but he looks like Mom from Futurama. I'm so confused. I don't understand how this is possible. Anyway, apparently, Oodles also, he became unhinged, mentally unhinged because of his new diet and exercise regimen, which is unfortunate because, as we know, diet can only affect your weight so much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This poor guy was probably, like, starving himself, and it's like, dude, it's not gonna work. You're just an ectomorph, or... an endomorph? Yeah. I don't know what the name
endomorph,
is.
Yeah.
Endomorph.
The endomorph. Like, it sounds like ectomorph should be the fat one because that means outside, like taking up more space. But no, endomorph is the fat one. Ectomorph is the skinny one.
Yeah. Well, in any case, I feel kind of sorry. I feel bad for Oodles. It seems like he got a raw deal.
However, I will say that if Oodles is supposed to be 465 pounds, now compare him to Hippo Calorie, and Jesus Christ, Heap must be over 900 pounds.
Yeah, they didn't, again, don't really make Oodles look particularly big at all, you know? I mean, they did give him, like, a kind of this weird blue pompadour, I guess.
He had that in the comic, too.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay. I guess that's why cutting his hair, like, you know, made him look so different. Yeah,
because you couldn't see his eyes.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Well, anyway, porn went out for Oodles. Sorry, we did not see Oodles in the Dick Tracy cartoon. We didn't watch an Oodles episode.
No, we didn't.
Let's talk about BBIs. What is BBIs?
Okay, BBIs. So, I mean, my first thought was, okay, so he's going to have little beady eyes. I can get that.
Yes,
But he doesn't. Instead, his eyes literally roll around loose in the sockets. What the fuck? That's creepy.
That's the thing is, like, I am, there's a lot of freakish, Dick Tracy villains, and I accept most of them. Like, oh, okay, Prune Face, sure, he's wrinkled. Yeah, okay, I accept that. Flat Type, he's got a bad haircut. Sure. Little Face, well, that's kind of weird, but I suppose I could see how someone might be born with a very small face.
Yes.
But, like, eyes that are pupils specifically that just kind of roll around willy-nilly as though they're weighted. How does that happen? That seems, I'm trying to see now in the comic strip, do his eyes do that?
Well, I mean, they can't animate it, but no, yeah. I don't think they do. I think he just has tiny beady eyes.
Yeah, because I'm trying to look it up on the Dick Tracy wiki, and it doesn't mention anything about his eyes rolling around like that.
Speaking of Dick Tracy villains, here's my favorite grotesque one up right here. This is like, Dabstract.
Let's take a look at... so he looks like Two-Face.
Yeah, he's got a kind of Picasso thing going on, because one of his eyes is sideways.
Again, not really sure how that could happen in real life, but I do have to say Dabstract is definitely a good name. And I appreciate just the wackiness of it.
Oh, God, this guy is even worse. Have you ever heard of one called Wormy?
Oh, boy. Let's see him.
What do you
think
a guy named Wormy looks like?
I imagine a guy, he's going to be like really thin. He's going to have like a long nose. He's going to have like a bowler hat, probably big glasses. He's going to have glasses. No chin. He's going to look. What? Ta-da. What the fuck? What is this? What is this? Okay, explain Wormy's deformity to me, because
he doesn't look like he's. It's like he's just got vague suggestions of an eye and mouth, and the rest of his face just looks like literal ground beef.
Now, is he actually got like a wormy face, or is he like the blank where he just wears a thing over his face? You know?
No, that's his real face, as far as I can tell.
All right, let me look up Wormy Dick Tracy, because I got to know what the fuck is up with Wormy here. All right, so let's see. His face was gruesome and wrinkled, but he... Okay. Yeah, I mean, it is gruesome and wrinkled, but like... But that's not how wrinkles work. You don't usually have vertical wrinkles.
Yeah. Well, yeah. One of the most grotesque villains in the entire history of the strip, Wormy's face looked as if it were made of live earthworms. Oh, so his face moves? Ew.
Yeah, geez. I mean, some of these guys got shafted pretty bad.
Yeah. I feel like Tracy should, you know, I hope he's donating some of his, you know, enormous police budget to, like, I don't know, an orphanage or something for kids with grotesque deformities to help them grow up and be upstanding citizens, because they keep coming.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like in the world of Tracy, you really can tell when someone's destined for, criminality at an early age. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, it's, oh, no, my kid. It's, I had a baby with like an upside down nose. Well, I hate to tell you this. That's a criminal mastermind right there.
Sure enough, he grew out to be Drowner McGee.
I mean, I gotta say, this Wormy thing, this one kind of sucks. Because first of all, if you're gonna call him Wormy, I want a character that looks like a fucking worm. Okay, like the mole looks like a mole. Secondly, Oh, he's got a wrinkled face. You got Prune Face already. You already got a wrinkled dude. Come on. What are you doing here? Just ridiculous. Talk about scraping the bottom of the barrel. Not Chester Gold's finest moment.
No.
In fact, I would say probably one of the more lackluster villains that I've seen from Dick Tracy. And that's also keeping in mind people like Itchy, you know? It's like, where it's like, oh, he's a guy who he itches, or measles. It's like,
I was like, that's a condition.
Yeah. It's like, I'm sorry. It's like, he got measles. It's like in Dick Tracy world. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. You came down with measles. Well, I guess I better go commit a crime. I'm sorry. How long does the measles last? Like if you get the measles.
Well, I mean, you can die from it, but like 3 weeks.
Okay, so assuming you get the... So in the world is crazy. Assuming you come down with the measles, and then you go commit crimes, and you become a criminal genius. 3 weeks later, your condition improves, and you lose all your desires to do crime, along with the measles, you know?
Well, you know what they say, be sick, do crimes.
Yeah, in fact, I like that idea, because... that means that the most of the people committing crimes in Dick Tracy world are going to be literal children, since they're the ones who usually get the measles. It's like, you know, you're just like, Dick Tracy, we got an APB out. We got measles is teaming up with mumps and chicken pox, and they're going to hit the National Bank. Man.
They've got that. That blonde bombshell rubella with them.
Oh man, actually, that's a good one. They should have. They really missed out not having rubella in this.
Yeah. Now they're a member of that new all sick gang, the COVID-19.
Nice.
The covert 19.
Oh, woo! Actually, there you go. So, you know, it's measles, mumps, chicken pox, rubella, influenza. another lady. That's another lady. Yeah,
influenza.
Yeah.
Influenza Jones.
Yeah.
Now, not to be confused with Influence, who is a hypnotist.
Oh, that's right. Let's see. So that's five. Then you, what other diseases are there? Diarrhea. diarrhea. Yeah. That's,
another hot chick.
Another hot chick. It's like, yeah. Well, everyone's like, oh, diarrhea McGee. She's an artist.
She's on the run.
Let's see. Bubonic plague. Anorexia.
Contagious anorexia. Ooh.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. What other conditions can you have? That's all diseases known to man.
Yeah, let's not include an HIV character. That seems unfair.
That's
uncurable. So they would go up the river. So we can't have an HIV character. And we can't have a rabies character.
No, they'll have to be diseases that can be cured. Because that means the covert 19 is basically a rotating roster. Because as soon as you're like, I'm going to retire because I don't want to do crimes anymore. So they have to replace you with someone else who got the same disease.
Yeah, they just find someone that you infected.
There you go, man. They're creating their own replacements.
You know, we've been talking about how Dick Tracy isn't very good, but, you know, we keep coming up with great ideas for it.
I mean, that's the thing is, Dick Tracy itself is, like, it is, again, it's like Batman, where it's like, you want to make your own you want to make a Batman story? Create your own, like, villain OC, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
It works. So, everyone should be doing, too bad Dick Tracy can't come back because we could all be doing our Rogues Gallery sonas, you know?
Yeah.
Rogue sonas, you know?
And everyone would be spelling it Rouge.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, always do.
They'll be like, my Rouge sona is a sexy bat. But anyway, BBIs is kind of lame. I do think it's funny though that like when BBIs and Flat Top are escaping, like BB, they're like, who should drive? Oh, BBIs. Really?
Of course. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, but that doesn't come up. You would think that would be like a thing.
He was a terrible driver and aim because his eyeballs roll around wildly, but it doesn't come up.
Yeah, none of their things other than like Pruneface kind of being annoyed at Itchy's scratching, you know, which is a running gag that does not work in this particular episode because half the time they're communicating through the submarine's intercom and Pruneface is like, stop scratching. Why is it annoying? You can't see it. You literally can't see it, man. Just whatever, Pruneface. It's like now I'm Prune Tracy.
I was hoping we'd see Prune Tracy in this, especially in the mask episode.
But we have not discussed there are a couple
the
more.
Other two heroes,
The other two heroes.
Now Let's talk about Go-Go Gomez.
So Go-Go Gomez is not as bad as another one. He's not as bad. Now, he is Mexican. He's a Mexican stereotype. And what's funny about him is, like, if you said you want to do a Mexican stereotype, they just do, this is the thing you do. You know, he wears a big sombrero. He has all white outfit. He's all white outfit. He does that thing where he will say things and then at the end say, I think.
Why is that a thing?
I don't know. Let me look up. Why do Mexicans say, I think? Let us investigate. Get to the root of this. Why? The internet, tell me. Why do Mexicans say, I think? It's probably just,
To some movie character that we don't know.
Yeah, and I assume it probably started out just because they were like, oh, it's a word that you can, say that sounds funny if done with a Mexican accent, with a really exaggerated, because you draw out the, you know, I think, but it's like, yeah, half time he says it for things that it doesn't make sense, because he's just like, where it'll just be like, what's your name? And he's like, my name is Arriba Chiquita Benita Gomez. I think. What do you mean you think? They ask you your name.
Your name or none.
Yeah, you know your name.
What do you want for lunch? Tacos and burritos, I think.
It's like...
it turns out that was wrong. I wanted a hamburger.
It's like, go Gomez. Are you doing this because you don't have the confidence in... Are you using... What do you call that? Modifiers so that you don't seem too overbearing when you say things, because he's
anything
like,
I think is fine.
Yeah. Cause it's like, why are you saying this go Gomez? But he's a Mexican stereotype. It is funny that Dick Tracy is all like, all right, I'm going to call up the guys who work for me. One is an Irish cop type guy, one is a dog cop, one is a random Mexican guy not even wearing uniform,
plain clothes.
I guess so. He's just, you know, he's just a Mexican guy who sleeps in a hammock in lives in our city, you know. Yep. Being Mexican. The thing about
Tracy doesn't live in Mexico. Where does he live?
That is a good point. That is a good point. This whole time Dick Tracy lived was a Mexican cop. His that would definitely make you think to realize that Dick Tracy took place in Mexico. But the thing that I find interesting about Go-Go Gomez, right, is his gimmick that he's very fast. Like, he runs really fast, right?
Yes.
And I was like, okay, obviously Speedy Gonzalez, right? That's what we're all thinking. But I was like, why did they ripped off Speedy Gonzalez this blatantly? And
to the point where he's sometimes voiced by Mel Blanc, just like Speedy Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Who uses the same voice.
It's exact same. And I was like, how did they get away with this? But then I actually figured it out. Okay, I think I figured it out, right?
Right.
They did not realize that they were ripping off Speedy Gonzalez because they were so incredibly lazy in making a Mexican character and just making it nothing but stereotypes that I think they looked at Speedy Gonzalez and thought, oh, that Mexican mouse is very fast. And instead of realizing that is an idiosyncratic thing about Speedy Gonzalez, they just assumed that was a stereotype about Mexicans that was up for grabs. And so they decided, yeah, Mexican guy runs really fast too, because everyone knows Mexicans run really fast. That's my theory about this.
I like that theory. I like the idea that they were just, you know, just grabbing things without, you know, without even any regard to context, and they ended up pulling something that was, you know, supposed to be unique. Like, you know, what if he had been, you know, what if he hadn't been fast, but he had been a mouse?
Oh, yeah. they'd be like, yeah, you know, everyone knows Mexico is entirely populated by anthropomorphic mice.
Yeah, that's why Topcat is so popular there. Oh, wait.
Oh, you know, because they like to be scared, you know. But, you know, that's why they have Dia de la Mortis, you know. I'm trying to think, like, of, it's like if you did, I don't know, I'm trying to think of, like, what is another kind of stereotypical character that has, like, a ethnic stereotype that does a thing that is not ethnically stereotypical? Okay, here we go. It's like if they looked at, like, like Mario, and instead of taking from it that, like, oh, because he talks about, like, Mario's all like, hey, I like a pizza pie, I hope the prince made a lot of spaghetti. And they were like, okay, everyone knows that the stereotype about Italians is that they hate turtles, you know? And then they made, what's his name? Our what is the Italian guy we made up? The
Mamma
guy.
Mia.
Yeah. Mamma Mia. If they just decided, Mamma he Mia hates Arena. Turtles, yeah. You know, instead of,
oh, I hate the turtles. Mama is a turtle. I hate the turtles.
I get the turtle for you, man. Mamma Mia. Oh, thank you, Mama.
It's like,
yeah, he's scared of turtles, and his mom comes out and hits them with a rolling pin or something.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, when I was a kid, just about eighth grade, Mama used to say, watch out for the turtles. That doesn't really rhyme.
What?
Anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
Go-Go Gomez.
Go-Go Gomez. Now, this is a character that you would never be able to get away with now because it is a Mexican stereotype. And the reason for that is because no one ever consults actual Mexicans who seem to freaking love this stuff.
Yeah, I understand Speedy Gonzalez is actually very popular among...
I think it's because in America, we assume that because African-Americans and Mexican-Americans are both minorities, so we should treat them the same way. But the history of how we portray African-Americans and the history of how we portray Mexican-Americans are two very different things.
Yeah, there is, I mean, a tendency in America, an American popular thought, to just collapse everything that is not, you know, in air quotes here, normal, by which I mean white, into the same thing. But as you said, you know, the experiences of people of different, you know, backgrounds and ethnicities are very different. I used to work at a historical house museum here in town. And this happened all the time where, because, you know, here in California, there's a very unfortunate history with Chinese immigrants, you know.
Yes. We had laws that specifically excluded them. So.
Yes. And, you know, there's a long history of, violence and discrimination and you know, there's too much to get into. But people would always come in and they would basically be like, they were slaves, right? The Chinese were slaves. And it's like, no, the history of Chinese in America and the history of Black people in America are very different. Not to like try and get into this thing where like be like, oh, you know, one's better or worse or whatever. Yeah. They're different. And
this is,
you know,
not the oppression Olympics. The Chinese did go through, you know, a ton of, you know, horrible things, including this is only legendary, but supposedly they were being, you know, held up by ropes to insert dynamite into holes in cliffs and then being pulled up as fast as somebody could get them to get clear.
I would believe it because, like, I mean, Chinese lives
there's no record of it, but why would you make a record that you were doing that?
Yeah. I mean, Chinese lives... Well, lives in general in those days were very expendable, and Chinese lives very much more so. So, you know, there's definitely a history there, but it is a unique history to the Chinese, and it does a disservice to just be like, oh, it's the same history as Black people in the States. It's not.
And as we As we pointed out in a much earlier episode, the very, you know, the very famous and very wealthy original Siamese twins, Chang and Eng, were themselves slave owners. So it's a different world.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that is a thing, is people, you know, again, Americans, we kind of tend to collapse these things mm-hmm. into very simplistic, very, very simple mental schemas. And
white
the reality,
and other.
Yeah, white and other. And the reality is very, very complicated. For example, again, this thing, you know, with the Chinese here in California, in the town where I live, you know, there was a large Chinese population back in the 1800s. Not anymore, for reasons.
Demographic change.
Yeah. But one of the things that happened is, like, there was a lot of anti-Chinese violence. And one of the weird things about this is there was like, Americans in those days loved to form clubs. For any reason, they just did this club thing. They're like, we're going to have a club. And they had a bunch of anti-Chinese clubs, one of which was called the League of Caucasians, which was mostly involved in, like, you know, anti-Chinese stochastic violence here in this town. And one of the weird things about this is it because they kept the minutes of these meetings and actually published them in the local newspaper, because that's how brazen they were about this stuff.
Shit.
Is the League of Caucasians actually included black members. Because there was a weird sense back then, if reading this, that, like, although white people generally did not like black people, you know, and were still racist against them, that in some ways they were preferable because at least they were American. And in, you know, there's also this fact that, like, a lot of black people who lived out here also felt, you know, threatened by the Chinese because they would work so cheap, which, you know, so there's a lot going on there. I mean, there's also the fact that, like, you know, there was a lot of labor disputes out here, and, you know, that involved a lot of, you know, it had an extra racial dimension because mm-hmm. of, in fact, also it's very weird because here's another thing about this local thing we're talking about, race. There was a strike in this town in the 1800s. The Chinese mm-hmm. workers actually went on strike, and because they wanted, you know, fair pay. And the local land baron, who basically employed most of the Chinese, he had he had Native Americans living on his land here. Mm. His land, in air quotes again. It was their land. He just, you know, he took it. But they continued to live here, which in some might say is, you know, good, you know. He could have done a lot worse, I guess. So credit him for that. But yeah. He was deriving a benefit because they did work for him, you know, on this land that was originally theirs. And he employed the Native Americans as strikebreakers against the Chinese, which, you know, is like, so again, it's like, there's a lot going on here. The history of race in America is bizarre and complicated. And in fact, it also gets weird because, you know, we like to think, because people would always come up to me and they're always like, okay, well, how were the Mexicans treated back then? You know? And it's like, well, that was, again, this was all part of Mexico back then, mm-hmm. you know, originally. So they were, we didn't, you know, people did not think of, you know, the original Mexican inhabitants of this area, the Californios, in the same way that, you know, white Americans today often conceive of Latinos, you know, mm-hmm. it's
the racial yeah. makeup of was completely different at the time. It was much more, you know, divided. You know, there were not what we call what we simplistically call Mexicans, e.g. mestizos, the descendants of the Spanish settlers and the natives of the Mexican area. Hadn't even been born yet. It was still very divided into white and Indian.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, and then there's a, like, a weird divide there as well, because they were, you know, they had tame versus wild Indians, as they called it here in California, which is another bizarre thing. Basically, like, which Indians have, you know, been able to have acclimated to the white man's world, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter, because, of course, there was, like, tons of genocide against Native Californians as well. So, mm-hmm. You know, anyway, boy, this is a great conversation for two dumb white guys to have, to talk about the intricacies of historical race. Anyway, hopefully we have not, like, put our foot in it too much, but, nobody listens this deep into the podcast anyway. I'm sure it'll be fine. Everyone who came listening up.
Mm-hmm. You might have a two-parter here too, and that's right. The second part.
Yeah, people are like, "I got everything I need." I think Tracy from the first. I got everything I need from that like 20-minute discursion into like clown hosts on TV.
Well, I think it was smart of us to talk about two of the heroes in the first half and two of the villains in the second half, or two of the heroes in the second half.
That's right. But anyway, so Go-Go Gomez, I will say this, he's got a little bit more personality than our other heroes.
Yeah, I think so. The fact that, you know, we do learn a lot about him, even if it's kind of, you know, kind of like, stereotype. We do see that he's got, like, the address of some girl on his wall.
Yes. I like that...
He's kind of a show-off. He likes to demonstrate how he did something amazing.
Yes. I like that he's a little sassy, you know?
Yes.
So that's kind of fun. He's definitely, you know, he's got a little bit of a spark that kind of makes him not, even though he is a stereotype, he's got enough of his own personality that I'd be like, okay, you know, you could probably rehabilitate this character into something, you know, that might work today. It would definitely take I think you would need to hire a sensitivity reader, you know,
I'm thinking of how, you know, getting back to Batman, the animated series and all of the shows that eventually evolved from it, in later episodes of Justice League Unlimited, they introduced some characters who were actually reimagined versions of the quote-unquote politically correct characters from Super Friends.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah, so if you don't know, Super Friends, you know, facing accusations which were pretty accurate of it being an all-white show, introduced some characters that were not, which included Black Vulcan, the Samurai, Apache Chief, and two characters who appear to be aliens called the Wonder Twins. Now, these characters were reimagined in a much more modern style in Justice League. My favorite being the new version of Apache Chief, which I think Sean Baby famously said, you know, that's like calling your white superhero Minnesota President.
Oh, Sean Baby still got it.
He still got it, yeah. So Apache Chief, who was best known for being able to grow to the size of a building, was recreated as a still native teenager with the much more ominous name Long Shadow.
Can he still get big? I mean, that's still his thing?
Yes, he still gets big, yeah. Hence the Long Shadow.
Makes sense, yeah. Okay, that is an improvement.
I don't remember the rest of them. I have to look it up. Oh, yes. The group was renamed the Ultimen. And let's see. Samurai, whose power was to turn into a tornado, as a samurai does.
Right. Okay.
was recreated as Wind Dragon, which is, you know, I think it'd be better if it was actually in Japanese, but whatever.
And, yeah.
Yes. Black Vulcan, who, like almost all black superheroes, had electric powers. I think we've had this conversation before.
Yeah, I think that, interesting. I wonder why.
I don't know. It's a thing, though. It is a, you know, storm can conjure lightning, and then we have, of course, we have Black Lightning, also known as Black Vulcan, and then we have Electro from that recent Spider-Man movie, who was played by, what's his name? I was going to say Steve Harvey, but it wasn't Steve.
It was Jamie Foxx, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jamie Foxx, yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, Static, a.k.a. Static Shock.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of black superheroes and villains with electric powers, to the point where it's sort of become a running gag, like, you know, black people always play bass and they always get electric powers.
Huh. That's, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think, is there, yeah, I'm blanking on it.
I can't think of any specific source that it would have come from.
Yeah.
Apart from that, you know, maybe it's one of the few things that there isn't any existing, like, stereotype from somewhere else. Like, you know, a black person in flames, not good.
Oh, that's a good point. So, like,
a black person in water, not good, as we learned, as Killmonger pointed out.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I think, like, they were like, okay, we're not going to get in trouble with electrical powers. That's fine.
A black person in a metal suit? Oh, like chains?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a, yeah, no, you're probably, that's probably right. They probably just figure, like, electricity is safe. We're not going to get it. It's like, oh, wait, you mean, black people with electrical powers? You mean, like, electricity, that thing discovered by the slave owner Benjamin Franklin?
That's a bit of a stretch. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually don't know if Benjamin Franklin owned slaves, but I'm going to assume he probably did, because, you know.
I think he owned them, but then he freed them, but I might be wrong.
I mean, that's better.
Better than nothing.
Than not. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's,
and I'm not,
it's
definitely, sure either, so.
Yeah.
I might be thinking of P.T. Barnum, who owned slaves, but then freed them and became a abolitionist.
Oh, well, good for him.
Yeah.
Instead, though, P.T. Barnum is a complicated character.
He sure is.
Because it's like, because didn't he own a bunch of freaks?
Freaks and owned a bunch of slaves, and then he became an abolitionist. But I don't know if that abolition applied to, you know, people you own as part of the freak show.
Yeah, man.
But like I said, the Chang and Aang were very wealthy for having worked with him. So
yeah,
I don't think they had to buy their own freedom.
Man, I thought you were going to say they didn't have to buy their own freaks, and it would be funny. It's like, wait, I was about to say, did Chang and Aang have their own freaks as well? Oh, man.
Well, thankfully, when you go to a freak show or human Marvel show now, they are generally family run. It's the, you know, I wouldn't, you know, the freaks running the freak show. No, that's a good thing.
That's right.
Not like, well, the, you know, running the asylum.
I understand that a lot of freak shows these days are a little different. They generally aren't. It's kind of frowned upon to just be like, hey, here's a person with a, you know, an unusual physical condition. I think a lot of them now are kind of more like,
performance showing off your talents, as you know, that take advantage of your capacity. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, most people would not pay a dollar to see a fat man now, because, you know, you can just stay home and do that.
But, yeah, I'd pay a dollar.
But yeah, but I bet some people would pay to see a fat man who was also a kick-ass break dancer, and that tends to be one of the
yeah I can see that. I did I tell you when I went to the freak show at the local fair we had here?
No. Was there a freak show?
Well, I shouldn't. Freak show is giving it a little, you know, is being a little highfalutin. Basically, at our local
punks?
No, it wasn't even that. It was like, aww, basically at the local, this guy doesn't show up anymore, but it used to be at the local fair, because I live in the boonies here up in Northern California. There was always a guy with a tent, and he would just be out. It would just be called The Weird Thing. That was the name of the tent. And he would be out there saying, $1, see the weird thing, $1, it's weird, what is it? Oh, the thing, it's so weird. And you'd be like, well, fuck, I gotta see the weird thing, right? See, it's only a dollar, you know.
What's the thing?
Well, it would change. Every year he had a different weird thing. One year, the only one I really remember was one year he had a two-headed turtle.
Oh, you know,
it was
cool.
It was like one of those little slider, red-eared sliders, and it had two heads. I think only one did anything, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, usually I think that's the way it is. You know, one head kind of is the real head, and the other one is just vestigial. But, you know, you go in and you look at it, and you're like, well, that was worth a dollar. you know?
Yeah.
And then he said, if you pay an extra 50 cents, you can see behind the curtain. And it's like, well, I got to see behind the curtain. What's mm-hmm. behind the curtain? And if you look behind the curtain, it was like he had a frozen Yeti. but it was like, I looked at it and I was like, and he'd be like, and he had a spiel about it. But I was like, well, that frozen Yeti, first of all, is clearly just like a gorilla suit. And that block of ice that it's in is made of plastic. I can see the seams. Yes. And also, it's 100 fucking degrees out. So very clearly, you don't just have a giant ice cube back here. But also, it's like, yeah, well, it's 50 cents, you know. I'm not going to... It's like, what do I expect for that, you know? But it was smart to have that one be the second thing and the turtle first. Because when you see the turtle, you're not like, oh, I've been ripped off. You're like, yeah, that's worth a dollar. It's a two-headed turtle. And then when you see the thing, you're already like, well, I'm already in for a, you know, penny, in for a pound type thing. So it's like, yeah, sure. So it's one of those things where afterwards you're like, yeah, that was worth it.
I saw the weird thing.
Yeah. But he doesn't come around anymore. So I don't know. I guess maybe it wasn't profitable to do this for a dollar. It's too bad because I feel like that's a real like quality, like a bit of Americana when you go to a fair and you get to see like a, you get to see something like that. Anyway, but we were speaking of, what were we speaking of? Oh, Gogo Gomez.
Gogo Gomez, yeah. So Gogo Gomez is, you know, unlike Hippo Calorie and Hemlock Holmes, he's pretty good at his job.
Yeah, yeah. And he does capture he captures villains not by mistake. He actually does it on purpose. So he's not like bumbling into success.
Yes, Hippo Calorie basically, just flushed the bad guy out, and then the bad guy just ran into the jail cell that that Dick Tracy had ready for them. Hemlock Holmes got beaten up by his own men, and
what a dumbass!
Yes, while the villains crawled out, and Flat Top actually addressed the camera and said, "It's a good thing this guy has bow legs."
it's like thanks for explaining the joke, Flat Top.
Yes. But no, Gogo Gomez, he's the one who they put on the case of Stooge Viller. Oh no, not Stooge, it was the Mole and Sketch Paree had a perfect mask of Dick Tracy, but he just happened to own masks of Sketch and the Mole too. So So they show up to rob the bank in the Dick Tracy outfit, and Gogo Gomez shows up in the Mole outfit saying, "Here you go, boss." And I gotta say, for a guy with such a strong Mexican accent, his Sketch Paree and Mole voices were on top.
Yeah, he's got he's got a lot of talents that are actually very applicable to police work.
Yes. So, yeah, you can see why it would be appropriate to have somebody that, you know, if you saw Manuel Tijuana Guadalajara Tampico Gogo Gomez Jr. on the street, you wouldn't think he was a cop, but he's a really good one.
Yeah.
I mean, he actually solves crimes, unlike most cops.
Yeah, that's right. So I guess, you know,
unlike half of the cops on this show.
Yeah. Much, much more. He does more, a lot more than Dick fucking Tracy. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. See, that's kind of the problem with this show is that you want to hate the characters that are the racial stereotypes, but they're actually the best characters.
Yeah, they actually get the job done, you know?
You know, they get the job done. They have the best jokes, and it is actually fun to see them in action. So,
yeah. Yeah, like, because Hemlock Holmes and Calorie O'Heap, you're just kind of like,
shit.
Yeah, whereas Gogo Gomez is like, okay, he's actually like, seeing him in action is like, because he's got some good jokes, and I mean, I'll say this, like, you know, the racist stereotypes on this show, the very least I can say about them is they're not like malicious,
no,
you know,
that's, like, that is the thing is that they are, you know. Our two characters, Gogo Gomez and, yes, Joe Jitsu, despite the fact that they are, you know, they make you cringe, but at the same time, at no point is it like that, you know, these are less than human.
Yeah.
They are respected co-workers of Tracy that he is, you know, proud to work with.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll you know, credit where it's due. This could have been a lot worse, you know? Especially when we get into Jiu-Jitsu, because this is, you know, what, 1962, I think?
Yeah, 1961 to 1962, yeah. So Jiu-Jitsu is, it says that he's a parody of Charlie Chan and Mr. Moto, who are themselves, you know, classic Asian detectives who are always portrayed by white guys.
Yeah. He is that kind. He's in that mold. So if you want to think of Jiu-Jitsu, think of, well, again, it's 1962. We're going to have a Japanese character on this cartoon. You already know exactly what he looks like, what he sounds like. You know everything about this character right now. You don't even have to do a Google search.
Let's clear some. You might be imagining that he's wearing a karate gi. He's not.
Okay, that's true. That is one place where he breaks the mold. Although he's dressed more like you said, Charlie Chan. He's got a little suit.
He's wearing a nice suit and a bowler hat. I don't know where we got the idea of the Japanese being into bowler hats, but whatever.
Yeah. But otherwise, I mean, it's what you'd expect. He's got the He's got the slanty eyes. He's got the big buck teeth. He's got the Tojo glasses. Yes. He's got the
little mustache.
Yes.
Like, not quite a Fu Manchu mustache, but just kind of a little pointy mustache, like Worf.
Yes. And of course, you know, he does that thing where he addresses everyone as Honorable So-and-so, and... You know, he does jiu-jitsu. He does martial art.
Yeah, he does. His martial art is basically throwing people around, but while still holding on to them, slamming them around like basically like what the Hulk did to Loki.
Just yes.
Wham, 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 puny god.
But
he always does it while apologizing. And I think that's the worst trait, is that he's portrayed as being kind of insincere because he apologizes and then he does it again and again.
Yes. And that is, again, like, that is a very old-timey racist trope about the Japanese, this kind of unctuous, insincere politeness, you know? Which I'm sure has its roots in wartime propaganda, where we always think of where the Japanese are always portrayed as uniquely sinister and slimy. You know, the Germans at least could be admirable villains, you know, because they're so Teutonic and Aryan. But the Japanese being you know, subhuman primates are not to be trusted.
And in modern stuff, when I read Japanese, like I was trying to learn Japanese in my 20s, and I got a couple of Japanese textbooks, and they always talked about how there are lots of different politeness levels, but there's like almost no like literal swear words in Japanese. Almost anything that you say can be said rudely enough to be taken as a swear or politely enough to be used in polite company. And I was like, yeah, that does sound like, you know, there's going to be a lot of excuse me, please, I'm very sorry. You do a lot of apologizing in advance. But at the same time, I was like, that's not too different from English. You know, we have things that we say at a lot of different politeness levels.
Yeah.
You know, you can say, you know, there's a big difference between please excuse me, I had an accident, and I shit my pants.
That's true, but it's okay when we do it because we're white.
Yeah.
It's okay if our language has nuance. But when the Japanese do it, that seems very inscrutable.
Yes. And when they, and because of this, when they teach Japanese to English speakers, they always give you the highest politeness level so you don't offend anyone. Mm-hmm. So the Japanese consider Americans to be incredibly polite, and they're always so thoughtful. Why do they shoot each other all the time?
That is so funny. You know, I do think it's very interesting the self-perception of Americans and the actual... Because here's the thing, is like, I think Americans, we think of ourselves as like, you know, oh yeah, we're like bluffing in your face and, you know, we tell like it is and we don't have any nuance. And when we go overseas, there's that stereotype about, you know, the ugly American being very, mm-hmm. you know, loud and obnoxious and just like blundering around and like, you know, and just rude to their hosts and everything. And it's interesting because like,
I've traveled. You've probably seen it though.
I have been overseas, you know, a lot in my life. I've traveled. I lived overseas and in various countries. And an interesting thing is I don't think that is not necessarily true, because the thing about Americans is Americans, although we like to think of ourselves as mavericks, Americans love to follow rules, you know?
We sure do.
We love it. We need rules for everything, and we're very important about following them. Now, a lot of times, you know, Americans are very rude and obnoxious, but they're always in situations where the rules say you're allowed to do that, like yelling at a service person, you know? But it's very different overseas, where there a lot of cultures have fewer rules and are much more like lackadaisical in things. Like, for example, if you go to a culture, say Italy, for example, which does not put a huge emphasis on lining up single file to do stuff. So Americans that I've known go to Italy get baffled by the fact they can't get anywhere because they're like, I'm trying to line up and people keep cutting me, you know, but I'm trying to follow the rules. So, So Americans, you know, again, like, so a lot of times Americans overseas, you know, and again, I think the fact that a lot of Americans who do travel overseas are very conscientious of that stereotype of the ugly American. And a lot of them do actually go out of their way to avoid being that because they're so sensitive about it.
Those ugly Americans probably don't want to leave America.
Yes. So that is another thing. You know, the people that you get who actually go overseas are a very particular self-selected demographic compared to the average American. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into that. If you're the sort of person who goes overseas, you probably are a sort of person who wants to some degree, learn and understand other cultures. And, you know, and that's, again, it's not universal because, like, obviously, when you're over, you know, as an American, if you go to, you know, there's certain cultures where we will seem very rude and others where we won't. Japan is always funny because I feel like also in Japan, they expect Americans to be very stupid and rude. So they're kind of disappointed that we're polite when we're too polite. Because they're like, oh, I thought that's like, you know, they're like, oh, I thought this American was going to entertain me with their, you know, with their blundering. But instead, they're being polite. What a letdown, you know?
Hey, you want to see that American, you got to go to America. You know,
that's
do
right.
You think a lot, you know, do you a lot of think a lot of guys, you know, take their MAGA hats on their trip to Denmark?
Yeah, exactly. Well, a lot of MAGA guys. Is that how it's pronounced?
Maybe. I don't know.
I always thought it was MAGA.
MAGA? I don't know.
Yeah. MAGA? Yeah, Ethan. Ethan, why don't you say American style? MAGA. What you pronounce it at all foreign.
Oh, sorry. Maha.
Oh, my God.
That would piss them off so much. Are you a member of Maha?
Maha. Yeah, they would not like that.
That's like how my new, when someone calls something woke, I'm going to pretend that I've only ever heard that in French. And go, oh, le wokisme, ooh la la.
It's like, when they're woke, it's like, ooh la la, Mr. Frenchy man here is all likes to use his foreign words. Oh, what do you call it? A car hole?
What do you call it? Politeness?
Yeah. Well, we don't do that in America anymore. You want politeness, you gotta go overseas.
We don't do politeness here in Maha.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that was, I guess, Trump's big, you know, contribution to America. It's just like, there are a lot of Americans who are like, we don't like the social contract. If only we could do away with it. It turns out you can. Anyway, so yeah, the Japanese are always are they actually like confused about why we shoot each other all the time?
Yeah, they just cannot fathom why shootings are such a big happens so frequently here, even after the death of their former prime minister.
Man, well, I mean, I guess that's true because think about it, like a political assassination is one thing, but if you don't live in America, it is extremely difficult to wrap your head around, you know, the hellscape that we live in. I mean, we're used to it like boiling frogs because we live here. But like, you know, if you told someone who doesn't live in America, like, yeah, there's a country where like, you know, don't go outside because, you know, you're basically taking your life into your own hand. You can be shot at any time, like, you know, at school, the post office, the movies, a concert, a festival, church, synagogue, walking down the street, have, you know, just
while sleeping in your own bed.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, and also there's a special class of people that we deputize and they can shoot you at any time and it's okay. They're allowed to. In fact, they get a paid vacation if they do it. So
and that's what makes these cops so much better. They don't have guns.
Oh, that's true. There's no imitatable behavior. So yeah, they're not allowed to have guns.
I mean, wait, maybe I'm wrong. Does Jiu-Jitsu fire on anyone? Does he have a gun?
I don't think he does. I think he just uses martial arts to do stuff. I mean, Hunlock Holmes encourages violence because they all beat up, you know, they use their billy clubs to beat up Itchy and Flat Top or whoever. Yeah.
There are some bullets exchanged there, so that's a little...
Yeah. But they do, I'll say this, they do a lot less damage than real life police because, you know, they don't kill any civilians and they do actually capture the villains at the end, which are two things that our cops here in the States don't actually do. Our cops mostly get paid large amounts of money so that all our municipalities are going bankrupt and they hassle homeless people. So that's about it.
Yeah, that's worth it. You know, they don't even hassle the homeless people you call them to hassle.
No. Now, and remember, and also, I guess you could also explain to the Japanese, like, yeah, you know, we don't like that. We had these, in fact, we had this thing a few years ago where everyone in America just, like, had these huge street protests because we were like, we don't like being shot. I mean, specifically black people, but, like, also in general, you know, we don't, it's, people were sick of being shot. And our leaders were like, you know what we should do? More shootings. We should
more
like
shootings and also change the packaging of certain products.
Yeah. I do think it's funny that like the only like it was we had that whole thing happen. And the only change I can think of is that like they hired a black actress to voice the black girl on Big Mouth. That's like the only thing I can think of that actually happened. And I think they
Aunt Jemima changed its name to the Pearl Milling Company.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Boy, look at what they took from us, huh?
Yes. Uncle Ben changed, you know, I was, honestly, I feel like they should have leaned into it and, you know, shaken hands and become Aunt Em Pancakes and Uncle Henry Brown Rice.
It would have been, there you go.
Not that I thought that Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben were a problem either way, but...
I mean, I think they had already, by this point, already excised most of the worst, stereotypical features of the characters. Because Aunt Jemima at this point is literally just like, oh, she's a black woman. I think she's got a kerchief. Does she still have the kerchief?
I don't remember. Think she even had the kerchief. No, she just looked like the mom from Family Matters at this point.
Oh, that's right. So, I mean, I guess, you know, at a certain point, it's kind of like... Yeah, it's. I guess in a certain way, it's like, yeah, we got rid of her. You mean you got rid of representation?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that that was actually. I don't know that that was a good move. I mean, it's a move, but I mean, more importantly, I don't think it's a move anyone was asking for. We were asking
not what they wanted.
No, it was. They were like, we were asking, please don't randomly murder black people. you know? And it was like, hey, how about, wait, how about instead that we change this pancake mix? Yeah, right.
How about we randomly disappear a black person?
Yeah, it's like, that wasn't really, well, okay. But you know what? I mean, that is America. That is what they do. We love giving lip service, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, but they wouldn't do that nowadays. Now it's 2 years. Times sure have changed since 2020, you know? Nowadays, if you tried to when get we rid were of young. Here's a question. Now, if today they got rid of Aunt Jemima from the pancake mix, mm-hmm. is she on pancake mix or is it syrup? I actually don't remember.
Both.
Oh, both. Okay. So let's say hypothetically, in this hype, let's do a Gedonk experiment. Okay. Let's assume that Aunt Jemima was still on the pancake mix post 2020. And in the year of our Lord 2023, they decided to get rid of Aunt Jemima from the pancake mix. How would the Chuds react to this? Would they be outraged at the wokeism because we got rid of, you know, this is what they're taking away from us and we want that because we're mad? Or would they be happy because having a black woman on pancake mix is anti-white racism? Like, well, how would they react? I'm not sure because I assume.
I think they would be happy until they saw a trans woman talking about it on TikTok, and then they would get so fucking mad.
They do get mad about the trans women. They get so mad. I think they're still mad at Bud Light, and it's been what, like, it's been a year? I mean,
6 months, maybe.
6 months. Yeah. Time flies. I think they would have a difficult time because I think generally they would be happy in reality because they would like to see less black people, but you don't get clicks on your YouTube channel by making a video about how happy you are. You have to get people mad. So they would have to invent a reason why it was bad. So that means that they would be like, hey, we got to find a trans woman talking about this. And if they can't find one, they'll just have to do like a Jamie Reed type thing and make it up, you know? So what a world we live in. Anyway, any day now.
Maybe we could use some actual, you know, weird little cartoon cops based on alternate nationalities.
Oh man, they would eat it up, you know?
Yeah.
They would. Or would they, actually? Or would they? Because
do you think they'd be mad about jiu-jitsu being representational?
They would. I feel like they would be mad. God, that's a hard one. Because it's like, I feel like if you did jiu-jitsu now, this is interesting, okay? Because the racial politics of Chuds are so, again, bonkers, right? Like, if you're like a normie, you kind of just assume like, oh yeah, they hate all minorities, right? But racists have this weird thing about Asians, because even like the most racist people, like H.P. Lovecraft, who hated the fucking Chinese and like thought they were like subhuman, was also had this weird thing where he's like, but I respect them because like they have a great civilization for like a mongrel race. They're not like the blacks who are just like, you know, monkeys. The yellow monkeys, in fact, are a superior kind of monkey. So they have their own weird hierarchy. Plus, all the Chuds now like are also like, oh, they all want to fuck like a schoolgirl from like they want to fuck like a Lolita child from Japan. So they have this weird thing where they are like they'll make exceptions and like, oh, we will accept Japanese as white because we all want to fuck a geisha. But you know, so it's kind of like I feel like they saw jiu-jitsu, they'd be like, we want to be mad because we hate seeing representation, but also it's racist, so we like it. But also, the Asians might be our allies because we like them because we want to fuck their women, you know, because they're so demure and submissive. I hope no one is going to take any clips from this episode out of context because
Special presentation is doing a bit here, folks.
We are doing it. We are talking. Well, you know, I mean, we're having a lot of good discussion about like racism in America, springboarding off this Dick Tracy.
It sounds like bringing Jiu-Jitsu and Go-Go Gomez back is the key to destroying them. It will make their brains vapor lock. They'll be computer, define love.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like they would. It would be very confusing, because again, these are very racist stereotypes, but they're from a time when I don't want to say like, oh, they're not malicious, so it's okay. It's not okay, but they are made by people who don't seem to have any like real hatred for Mexicans or Japanese. They're just dumb white people who are like, fine.
This is just what they knew. You know, if they had had more, you know, Mexicans and Japanese on the staff, there would have been probably much, much better, you know, much more subtle jokes, actually.
Yes. So I feel like the fact that these are, maybe they look at this and be like, well, it's racist, but I don't like it because it's not racist enough. It's not racist in the right way, you know? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they look at it and they're like, I want Go-Go Gomez to, like, you know, be like, I don't know, stealing someone's job, and also there should be like flies flying around his head, and he should be, I'm trying to think of
his
like,
back, you know, should always be wet.
Yeah. You know, like they want like, you know, they want the really vicious racial stereotypes, you know, like these are just too wholesome in a way.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like if they made a cartoon where there was like, you know, a Jewish character who's like, oy vey, I sure do love eating Kugel. And they'd be like, I hate this. They should be running a one world government, you know? Like, you know,
let's get out of here, BB Eyes. Here comes Go-Go Shlomo.
So, you know, it's like, well, you know, we're really diving deep into the Chud brain this episode.
Yeah, we didn't expect to get this much out of 20 minutes worth of cartoon that we watched.
Yeah. Jiu-Jitsu is, yeah, he, oh, also the, probably the worst thing about him is that he does have the, you know, the accent. They do do the,
They really love to do the RL confusion, which, you know, it is a real thing. I was just running into this, you know, the new Netflix One Piece series is out, and it's really good. I recommend it. But I'm still running into people who are like, why do they translate the coin as berries instead of bellies? It's like, well, for one thing, saying that somebody is worth 10,000 bellies, dead or alive, sounds weird.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's like, well, if I was making One Piece, I mean, yeah, sure, that's what it would be. But, you know, for the normie audience, I think they made the right choice.
Yes. And, you know, there is, they use the same character to represent R and L and sometimes even D.
Interesting.
Well, and similarly, they use the same character to represent P and B and V. So there's a little. But you don't often hear, somebody with a bad Japanese accent saying, you know, it's too bad that Jiu-Jitsu said, oh, it is Vivi eyes.
Yeah, I think at a certain point they'd be like, look, this is, no one will understand this. We can only mix up the word so badly, you know, before people are like, I don't know what's happening anymore. No, I mean, it is one of those.
And he does say aso, which is, of course, an actual Japanese phrase. But there's a lot of other things you could say instead of that.
Yes.
My personal favorite is naruhodo.
What's that mean?
That means I get it.
Oh, I get it. naruhodo. I guess Jiu-Jitsu does a little bit of that, you know, like, here's an Oriental proverb to close out the episode, but at least he doesn't say Confucius say, maybe when they were making this, someone on the show was like, that's Chinese, you know, yeah. Confucius is not Japanese. So at least they figured that out and just said,
I think there's some representation of Confucianism in Japan, but not much in Japanese immigrants to the US.
Okay. I didn't know that. I guess, you know, so this is, he's like I said, this is a very typical depiction of a Japanese character from this time period. It's slightly better than, you know, you're sat Mr. Jap or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for as much as we've gone into the, you know, the racial difficulties of jiu-jitsu and how I'm sure there were probably, you know, little Asian kids who felt hurt and excluded by him. But at the same time, there were probably some who liked him because he's actually my favorite character.
I mean, he is, he's got some really good
going for him.
Yeah. I do like some of, he's got some good lines. He's got that great gag where he wants to make the cargo faster. So he just draws more, you know, on the speedometer. That was pretty funny. He's way better than like a Calorie O'Heap. You know what it is? Sure. Cause I feel like Calorie O'Heap and Hemlock Holmes were not precisely defined characters, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like looking at them like, okay, what are you goofing on here? What is there? You know, like, a dog and he's British. Okay. I kind of get that. I mean, I get what you're going for, but you're also got the Keystone Cop angle and the accent is so bad that it doesn't even sound British. So I'm like, okay, like you should have more Britishisms in here and maybe this would work. And Calorie O'Heap, the Irish angle is completely lost. So both of them feel very floundery. Whereas Gogo Gomez and Jiu-Jitsu, I'm like, okay, I get it. That one's Mexican. That one's Japanese. I understand what you're going for. They're, you know, pinpoint precision. So, you know,
and in 1960, 15 years after World War II, how many characters were there in children's media that were both Japanese and good guys?
I do not think very many. The only one I can think of is, what was that mouse? That Japanese mouse, you know?
Oh, I think I know the one you mean. That was another parody of Mr. Moto, I think.
Yeah. There was a... I forget. It's like the name of this character. I watched a couple of his cartoons and it's very interesting because it's about a mouse. He lives in Japan and he does stereotypically Japanese things that he tells a viewer about. I think he has a cousin from America come to visit that he,
you're right. It's not a Mr. Moto parody, but I know the one you mean. What is this mouse character? But no, that one was actually created by a Japanese immigrant.
Oh, was it? Okay. That's interesting because I didn't know that. I actually assumed, because this is me showing my whiteness, right? Because it's from the 60s, I think. And I had assumed, okay.
Hashimoto-san.
Hashimoto-san. I assumed that cartoon was created by probably someone who had been an American who served in Japan, you know, during the war or something, and had some appreciation for Japanese culture and actually created this afterwards. It makes more sense that it was an actual Japanese person, though, who created that cartoon because it is very informative of, tells you a lot about Japanese culture. And,
it was created by Japanese-born animator Bob Kuwahara, who also directed them.
Oh, interesting. I would say that Hashimoto-san is a lot better than Jiu-Jitsu, but, if you're not spoiled for choice in Japanese representation on television back then, generally, these are the only two cartoon characters I can think of who are not just, you know, as you would say, as in the parlance of the time, you know, scheming.
They were not inscrutable.
Yes.
They were quite scrutable. That was what, you know, that was how you knew they were good guys. But, you know, the thing about the Japanese is they've never been inscrutable. You just have to, you know, put in the effort to scrute.
Yes. And, you know, it's like, that's the way it is with, I guess, the whole thing about Asians. Like, oh, I just don't get them. They're so weird and different. Well, you know, it is a very different culture.
Well, try looking.
Yeah, you know, it's like, hey, let me tell you, I bet American culture is pretty inscrutable if you don't grow up here, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
like, why do they keep shooting each other?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'll say this. I, you know, I'm an American. I was raised by Americans, you know, but I grew up overseas, you know. I did not actually live in America until I left for college. And coming to America after living overseas, even though I was raised by Americans and, you know, among Americans overseas, very often being exposed to American culture, you know, through, you know, military bases and stuff. It was still very weird coming to America and just being like, oh, this is different. Like, you know, like, it was just this bizarre thing coming here and be like, oh, you can't go anywhere without a car. You need a car. And it was just like, what? Why? You don't have trains? You don't have buses? What the hell? You know, it was,
where did you
it
go
was,
that didn't have buses.
I was in Los Angeles.
Oh, whoa.
Technically, damn. they do have buses in Los Angeles, but they run, basically it's like they have like, you know, there's a chart, like you go to a bus stop, right? And there might be a chart there that tells you when the bus comes. Probably not. Very often they put it behind just glass that has been like, you know, there since the 60s. So it's so scratch and smudge, you can't read anything. But then it's got like a weird, like basically like an astronomy chart you have to decipher to figure out when the bus is coming. And it's usually like, yeah, this bus comes every 3 hours.
Sounds about right.
You know, and if you get it, you know, you might need a transfer so you can transfer another bus. Oh, how is that cost extra? We won't tell you. And then also the reason they do that is because only poor people take the bus in LA. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, used to have the red car. Thanks, Cloverleaf.
Fuck you, Judge Doom. it is just, it is American culture is bizarre. And so I'm just saying is like, even as someone who is ostensibly, you know, I piss red, white, and blue, but it still was very weird when I first experienced it.
When you first pissed red, white, and blue, I imagine so.
Oh yeah. Like, you know, again, another weird thing when I came to America, finding out, I'll just say this, I was actually very surprised to find out that most American dudes do not kiss their dads. Because
I kiss my dad.
Well, I mean, most American dudes, you know, that's the thing. You may find that weird too. Like I found it weird.
Yeah, I do find that weird. Yeah,
because like you know, I grew up, you know, my family very physically affectionate. Like you know, I kiss both my parents and hug them, a brother or sister too. And it was just weird finding out, like when I talked to a lot of guys in America, they're like, no physical affection with guys and their fathers. And it's like, okay, I think that is changing. I do think that is actually something that is very changing very fast with newer generations. But for Gen Xers and older, I feel like that, you know, American masculinity is very different to masculinity overseas. And that's probably why we have a lot of our problems here in America might stem from that, you know.
I keep thinking of this picture I saw that was it was two pictures, one of a black father and his newborn son, and one 20 years later, and in both of them the little boy is lying on the dad's arm, and he's hugging him, and the caption was just, can't stop holding him even 20 years later.
Aww.
And it was really heartwarming, and it was all these captions, he's like, ew, what are you, gay? This is gross.
See, that is, yeah, you know, that is a problem with the, I feel like, American masculinity is this, that so many guys, it's just like, no, you are not allowed, you're basically touch starved. Like you are not allowed to have any physical contact with literally anyone. The whole point is that, and then it's just this idea is like, look, you need to get a girlfriend so that you can touch someone. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay. And I feel like, again, putting that emphasis on that is like, okay, that's kind of bad, because then when this guy doesn't have a girlfriend, then they're like, oh, well, I have to kill all women. You know, you get a lot of Elliot Rodger type things going on. Mm. And it's like, you know what, maybe, and whatever, there's it's a rich tapestry of fucked upness here in America. If someone was talking about how in, it was funny, I was talking recently about to someone, and it's like, you know, Japan also apparently has a lot of issues with, you know, space and intimacy and loneliness. Yeah. You've
probably heard of the hikikomori problem.
Yes.
People who just, you know, completely withdraw into their apartments and, you know, don't come out for months or even years at a time.
Yeah. And the thing is, someone, when they're talking about this, they're saying, you know, they have like maid cafes in Japan, where it's like, mm-hmm. you know, because people are so lonely, they have this thing where you basically, you go and pay to have a temporary girlfriend, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, and at one point is like, yeah, that's extremely fucked up, but compare that to America, where we have the same problems with loneliness, and we don't have anything to deal with it, which is kind of, it's fucked up in its own way, you know?
And before you say, well, there's Hooters, no, Hooters is closing down all the time.
Yeah. Hooters but Hooters is very quintessentially American, because it is like, yeah, you don't touch at Hooters.
I
don't want to make this come out like, we should have a thing where you're allowed to, like, you know, grope women. That's not necessarily the answer. I'm just saying is like, there's a lot, America has a lot of problems, and surprisingly, I feel like nobody has, and surprisingly, in this enterprising capitalist society, nobody has thought of like, a good way to make money off this that would solve it. They do monetize the rot all the time, but like always in ways that like make things worse, you know? I don't know that, like, I mean, I don't know, maybe because we don't have a, I don't know if, you know what? I don't know. I don't know how maid cafes go in Japan. I suspect probably they have a lot of problems with groping there and dudes getting a little too into it. So
they definitely have like bodyguards and stuff. And of course there are also host clubs, which are the same thing for lonely women.
Oh, interesting. Huh. Do they also have like, they also have special trains, don't they? So the women can go on the trains. And then, cause it's like there's like the perverts have to be on the other cars, I guess, because that's a big problem. Man, they got a lot of problems over there. But again, I can't throw stones because America's got a lot of fucking problems.
Yeah.
You know, we have. Anyway. You know,
in conclusion, the world is a world of contrasts.
That's true. Anyway, but I feel like we've made strides here today in learning to coexist and to learn more about our different fucked up cultures through the prism of Dick Tracy's racist cartoon.
Well, maybe Dick Tracy knew what he was doing when he delegated everything to these characters.
Maybe he
knew that we would have more to think about than, you know, if he had done it himself.
He was like, this may seem racist, but in like 50 years, it'll really make you think.
This is yet another thing directed by Abe Levitow. We've seen a lot of stuff by him.
Oh, have we? What else has he done?
He directed... He was the director of, he was involved with the Phantom Tollbooth, and then he was the director of what was the one with the cockroach?
Oh, you mean Archie the Cockroach? Shinbone Alley.
Shinbone Alley, yeah.
Huh. Well, he's a working guy.
We've seen a lot of things by him, and I'm sure that we're going to see more. So, and he was, because another interesting thing about Gogo Gomez, he actually first appeared not on this show but on Mr. Magoo.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah. And another thing, there's actually a Mr. Magoo Dick Tracy crossover episode where all of Dick Tracy's villains get together to take on Tracy, just like in the movie.
How's Mr. Magoo figure into it?
Apparently there is a villain who looks just like Mr. Magoo called Squinty Eyes.
Oh, okay. See, Mr. Magoo has a secret identity as a supervillain.
Wow.
Oh my god.
Well, they do have to take a, they do meet face to face, so they're not the same person. But
oh, okay. Oh, do they do that thing where they get them mixed up and then like they keep thinking that okay, gotcha. Yeah, pretty typical cartoon plot, why not? I guess we learned a lot today about, you know,
we laughed a lot and learned a lot, and now it's time to go, I think.
Yeah. I think. So should we cut there? So sorry, Honorable Ethan.
Before we go, what about you? What would your Dick Tracy deputy Sona be?
Well, his name would be Goblin, and he'd look like a goblin.
Oh, okay. I guess it would just be a goblin.
It would be a goblin. Yeah, why not?
It, you know, is it, you know, snuck around being like, that's my riddles three. And the villains were like, well, let's get out of here. Tracy, help!
Well, I guess, yeah, there you go. What about you, Ethan? What would your Dick Tracy Sona be?
So it would be like, you know, a big, dumb Danish guy whose name was like, oh, something like, you know, Abel Skeever Janssen.
And, you know,
and because
what?
Because he didn't do enough research, he'd always be plugging things with his finger.
You know, also, you know what? Abel Skeever is not even apple flavored.
No, it's not. It's, you know, thanks, Denmark.
Jeez. Yeah. Gotta say, like, yeah. It's like every time I go to Solvang, I'm like, what the fuck are you trying to pull here? What the fuck? Go back to Legoland.
Apple sized, I guess, for certain kinds of apples.
I guess.
Sure as God made little green Abel Skeevers.
I have not been so disappointed since I went to the Hans Christian Andersen Museum. And they left a lot out.
Yes, Abel Skeever Janssen would also have a lot of Hans Christian Andersen traits, and that's why he doesn't get to be in more than two cartoons. Oh, better yet, he's like Hans Christian Andersen, and he's just crashing at Dick Tracy's place forever, and Dick is trying to get rid of him.
He's just like, yeah, he got a bad review, so he just throws himself on the lawn screaming. All right. Well, I guess we should probably cut there. So
yeah, let's cut there. Yes. Sorry to keep it going there, folks, but we had one more thing to throw in.
Okay. All right. All right.